David Ledbetter Academy's senior instructor, Aaron Fagan.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thank you for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast, the most imaginative video golf podcast available. Video, you say? What? Oh, yes. The Golf Smarter Podcast proves that the best-looking video is all created in your mind. They say that video always adds 10 pounds to the way you look, but in the video podcast of your mind, I'm built like Tiger Woods and never felt better. All right, Fred, stop it. Today's guest is Aaron Fagan, senior instructor of the David Ledbetter Academy in Orlando, Florida. And previously, we've spoken to Dr. Robert Winters, the resident sports psychologist at the Ledbetter Academy, and have done a tea tour of Champions Gate Golf Course, which is where the Ledbetter Academy World Headquarters resides. But today, we're joined by one of just a dozen instructors who are lucky enough, no skilled enough, to teach along David Ledbetter. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks, Fred. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, no, it's a delight to have you on the show because you're part of the David Ledbetter School, which is no slouch school, correct?
That is correct. We've been one of the top-rated schools for a number of years now.
Wow. And in your area, in the Orlando area where you have golf 12 months a year, you probably have a good stream of students coming through, and you see a lot of different types of golfers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with where we're located in Orlando here, we have students literally that come from all over the world. We get them completely, like you said, year-round and from all over the country, all over the world.
Anybody famous you've worked with?
There's been quite a few famous people here.
Come on, give me a story.
I don't really have a good story for you, unfortunately. I mean, Peyton Manning came down a few years back, took some lessons with us. There's been a number of other, you know, famous people that David's worked with. Tommy Hilfiger comes to mind. Halle Berry was out here a while back. So quite a few, you know, quite a few non-professional golfers that have come to kind of tweak their games with us.
You're the senior instructor there.
I'm one of the senior instructors, yes.
So how many senior instructors are there?
And
what exactly does that mean?
Basically, what it is after a certain period of time, they upgrade us from a regular, just a certified instructor, to a senior certified instructor.
And that's a Ledbetter designation, not a PGA designation?
Correct, yeah. We've got our own in-house training program that we do for training all of our instructors. We have a worldwide director of training and certification. It does all our stuff in-house. Mm-hmm. He works with David very closely as far as picking the people that we want to have in the program that we train, and then obviously when they get certified and start teaching for us.
Hmm. One of the questions that I ask a lot when we talk to, like, the director of golf of a course, I ask them, what is the most common mistake you see? And frequently the answer will be people teeing off on the wrong tee box.
Mm-hmm.
As an instructor at an academy, what is the most common mistake that you see?
There's a lot of different mistakes that people will make. I would say probably the biggest mistake is the misperception about their self or their golf game. As far as, and when I say that, what I'm really talking about is someone comes in and says, you know, boy, I hit the ball really poorly, my short game's great, and I'm an 18 handicap. And you watch them hit some shots, and you go, okay, yeah, he hits it all right. And then you watch their short game, and their short game is what we would call, you know, under the level that it should be.
That's
and they're
being
really
polite.
What's that?
That's being polite.
Well, yeah, in a way, yes, it is. But the reality of it is that people think that, you know, okay, I've got a great short game. If I could hit the ball better, I'd score a ton better. And in reality, if they manage the golf course a little bit better and their short game was a little bit better, they'd save a bunch of shots that way.
Let's talk about course management. What does that mean for you?
Basically, it's playing the higher percentage shots to end up with the best outcome.
Oh, and how do you manage that?
Well, essentially, to give you a good example, if I'm a right-handed player,
okay,
and I play a fade, ball tends to go from left to right, and I get up on a tee box where there's out of bounds on the right, I'd want to set up down on the right-hand side of the tee box so I could aim the ball down the left side of the fairway to play for my slice, rather than setting up in the middle of the tee box or on the left side and bringing that out of bounds more into play. So I tee up on the right side of the tee box to aim away from the trouble, and it basically it improves my margin for error. My percentage for hitting a better shot goes way up.
Should you try to create a bigger angle for yourself at the tee box? I know, like,
absolutely.
Like if you're bowling and you're going after the 10 pin on the far right, you don't want to start on the far right of the lane. You want to go all the way over to the left and then just cut across, giving yourself a bigger angle, correct?
Exactly. To be honest with you, I'm not much of a bowler, but I know from a golf aspect, you essentially want to line up parallel to your trouble so that you're aiming away from it. And a lot of times, you know, people I've been out on the course with will look at me and say, well, that's really tough because there's water left and there's out of bounds right. And, you know, so now where do I go? And the real simple answer is, well, if you hit it out of bounds, you're going to put another ball on another tee, and you're going to be hitting your third shot. Where if you hit it into the water, well, at least then you're dropping up there and hitting your third shot from up closer, you know, towards the green.
Mm-hmm. Well, that does make sense. You don't want to do either of those, but that does make
sense. No, in a perfect world, you definitely don't want to do either of those. But the reality of it is that, hey, we are going to make some mistakes out there, and it's how we recover from our mistakes and really manage our mistakes that we do the best with.
And when we don't manage those mistakes, that's when our head gets in the way. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I mean, when we don't manage our mistakes, we tend to get down on ourselves, we get upset, we throw clubs, we swear, whatever the case may be. I mean, everybody's got their own little thing that they do when they get frustrated. But the reality of it is that we just kind of, we'll say we exaggerate the situation and make things worse.
Hmm. And the obvious question is, how do you avoid that, you know?
Well, the unfortunate thing is that there is no way to really avoid it. You know, every player is going to make mistakes. Everyone's going to have their bad shot or their couple bad shots around that they're going to have. I believe I read an article once about, you know, Jack Nicklaus saying that he only hit, in his best round he ever played, he only hit 4 perfect shots. You know, so for the rest of us to go out there and think that, well, every shot we hit should go right at our target and we should make every putt and every chip should be, you know, hit to a foot, it's not a realistic goal. But at the same time, if we can hit shots that, you know, when we do miss it, it's not a disastrous miss. We keep it, you know, maybe into the left rough instead of hitting it into the water on the left, or we hit it, you know, just barely off the fairway instead of hitting it into the out of bounds area, you know, that those kind of things that can save us. But there's really no way to, unfortunately, turn it off.
Right. Expectations will kill you.
They will, every time. Every time.
Oh, gosh. Do you prefer to work with a brand new golfer, someone who's coming to you the first time saying, you know, I've never held a club in my hand, this is my first lessons, a first exposure, or do you, you know, like somebody who's been at it for 15, 20 years, maybe a 10 handicap, and has some preconceived notions of what they're supposed to be doing?
I think, to be honest with you, Fred, I think it's great to do it, to do either way. You know, the reality of it is that every student that we get that walks through the door here is looking for the same exact thing. They want to get better. They want to be able to, you know, whether it's a 10 handicap trying to get down to an 8, or if it's a guy that's never touched a golf club before and there's a group of guys at his office that are going to start a league and he wants to play in that league but he's never played before, they all come to us for that exact same reason. They want to get a little bit better. So to be honest with you, it's very enjoyable to play teach all aspects of players, whether it's a, you know, a mini tour player trying to make it onto the PGA Tour, or, you know, a guy that's literally never touched a club before.
Hmm. What should be our expectations, and there's that bad word again, what should be our expectations on improvement over any given year? And that means, you know, how many strokes we can take off of our handicap, and kind of a time frame. But let's just say over a year, should we have expectations on how much we improve if we play once a month or twice a month?
Well, yeah, I mean, we all want to have expectations of how much we're going to improve. But the problem is that, you know, with our expectations of, okay, I have to improve two shots a month. Okay, so let's say we start off in January, we're shooting 90, and you go, okay, by March, okay, let's see, that's going to be 3 months. By the end of March, now I need to be shooting 84. And maybe something happens in February where you don't get to play and you don't get to practice at all. You know, you go on a big business trip or whatever the case may be. And so then all of a sudden you've got to throw your expectations out the window. I mean, to be honest with you, it really varies from player to player. For the player that has the time and the energy to practice and play a couple times a month, I mean, I would think it would be reasonable to think, you know, let's go with 3 or 4 shots a year off the overall handicap would be pretty reasonable. You know, you and I are both very fortunate where we play in climates are, well, that we can basically play 12 months a year. Players that are playing up in the northeast and in the north, you know, they don't have that luxury where they've got to play 5, 6, 7 months a year. So basically every March or April when they can actually start playing again, it's like starting anew in a fresh season. So expectations, you know, really, you know, we have to have expectations, but they also have to be reasonable based on not only our skill level, but also our handicap level and our time commitment.
Well, yeah. And is it, can you expect that you're going to improve your play if you're playing, say you play every week, but you know, that's the time you go out to hit. I mean, you get a bucket of balls to warm up with before your round, but you don't get a chance because of your schedule to go out and practice in between your rounds of golf. If you're just going out to play every week, could you expect to improve as well?
Or you can expect to improve a little bit. The improvement obviously is going to be much smaller percentage-wise than it would be if you had the time to put into practice and whatnot. But yeah, you can expect to improve a little bit. The problem is that, you know, with our swings, we rely generally quite a bit on timing, and timing can vary day to day, week to week, month to month. So, you know, we can have a good month where we play really, really well for 4 weeks in a row, and then we can have a bad month where we, you know, our timing's off and, you know, maybe we got a little kink in our neck or whatever the case may be, and we just don't hit it well that week and we score poorly. So it can really, to be honest with you, it can go either way.
Let's address those people up in the Northeast who are coming up to the time of year where they have to hang their clubs up for a couple months. What is it that they can do at home? They may not have practice facilities near them. That can keep them fresh, that keep their head going. What are the most important things to practice to, so when you come back, you're going to feel good about going out again and not being terrified?
Well, I think one of the big things is practicing a few simple things like grip and posture. You know, taking a pen when you're sitting at a desk and holding it and making your golf grip on it. That's a great one. While you're watching TV, you can hold a club
good.
And just practice your grip. Put your fingers on there, put your hands on there the correct way, take them off, and just so that you don't lose that feeling of what it's like to actually hold a golf club. Because a lot of times that is a big thing where, you know, it's like, you get started back up again, you go, which end do I even hold anymore? I forgot. So that kind of keeps things fresh. And then really, I think also another really helpful thing is stretching and making sure that you stay flexible and you keep sort of those golf muscles firing or active, whereas if we don't do the stretching and we don't, you know, do any sort of physical activity over the winter, we hibernate, if you will, then those muscles get, you know, a little bit worn out, or they get a little bit left behind, and then we've got to again start fresh.
Yeah, stretching and flexibility should be 12 months a year anyway, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How about training aids during the winter? What do you feel about training aids?
And well, training aids are okay. I think there's a lot of really good training aids out on the market for a lot of different specific needs.
Like what?
Well,
because I've always believed the training aids make golf more difficult.
I would agree with that to an extent. There are a lot of them that can make things more difficult. You know, there's no real saying of, you know, if you buy this training aid or that training aid, that it's going to make everything perfect in your world. It's unfortunate, but it's true. David's got a training aid right now, the Swing Setter, which has been an absolutely phenomenal thing, and it's a really, really great tool. It's not designed for every single golfer in the world. It's designed for a lot of them, but not everybody.
Who is it not designed for? since we're
it's going to depend on each individual person. Somebody that's got a very fast swing that may not need a training aid like the swing setter, it's not going to help them that much. But swinging a training aid in the wintertime in the north, I mean, some stuff like that, it certainly can help to a degree, but it's not the foolproof because you're not getting a ball flight, you're not seeing where the ball goes, so you really just sit and you make swings. And like I said, the swing setter is a great training aid for it. It's shorter just for that, but at the same time, it's not going to be perfect, and it's not going to ensure that when you step out after a long winter that you're going to be hitting it perfect.
Sure. Anything else?
No, that's really it. I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of different training aids out there designed for very specific problems. And, you know, if a player knows what their problem is or what they're trying to work on, they can find a training aid for it.
What about putting during the winter?
Yeah, I think putting during the winter's okay. I wouldn't say it's the best thing. I would definitely put sitting and using a club to practice your grip up above putting in the
really?
Wintertime. And for the very simple fact that, you know, the second that you get back out on the golf course and those greens haven't been necessarily mowed in the last couple weeks because the grass is fairly dead, that speed's going to vary a lot from your carpet in your house.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then a week later, guess what? Now the grass has grown in a little bit. They've cut it. It's actually rolling a lot better. So then again, the speed has changed once again. You know, hitting a few putts here and there inside your house, I think that's fine. But as far as sitting and practicing your putting for 2 or 3 hours a day inside during the winter, I don't really see the necessity of that.
Yeah, I have one of those like the 7 foot, 8 foot. Putting mats with a little hill in the hole and then comes back down and shoots to you. And I just find that for me, it works well in just my short putting and just keeping my confidence up and my, just the feel for a shorter putt. And of course it may not be for everybody, right?
Absolutely. No, I think, and like we said earlier, those training aids or that mat that you put on, it's a great thing to sort of, check your stroke every now and then to make sure that, the ball's still starting on the line that you intend it to, and that's important when you step back out on the grass, whether it's, bumpy grass or it's perfect grass, you still want that ball starting on line every single time. But there's only so much work you can put into that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a specialty as an instructor, what you like to focus on mostly, or when there's somebody that comes along, you go, oh, that's one's for me?
No, really what we do, we take a very individualized approach to all of our students. There's no one here that I would say is a specialist in, hitting drivers or versus hitting irons or chipping or putting. We're all very well trained in the short game. We're all very well trained in how to hit woods, and we're all very well trained in how to hit irons. So I wouldn't say that there was a specialty that anyone really has here.
Is there like a cause and effect type of thing that you would focus on?
Absolutely.
When we
talk about the golf swing and we look at a student swing, really the main thing that we're looking at is what our causes are and what our effects are. And I would say one of the biggest issues for students is that they tend to focus on effects. For example, the guy that swings and he just can't quite release it because his left arm is chicken winging, and he's going, I got to get rid of this chicken wing. So for 18 holes, he goes out on the course and tries to focus on stopping his left arm from chicken winging on the way through, when in reality, it's, the over-the-top swing path that is creating that chicken wing, and he's trying to stop something that he literally can't stop because his body has to do that in order to clear space for the club to travel.
Hmm.
But basically, our whole teaching philosophy really revolves around cause and effect.
Hmm. How about let's see if we can find some drills that we can do together here. What something that you like to say? Hey, try this one. Do you have anything that you want to share with us today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that
awesome.
A couple of good fundamental drills. Number one would be just taking a club and putting it across your shoulders, kind of making an X with your hands across your shoulders, and getting into, a good athletic golf posture. And we talk about athletic posture. It's weight on the balls of the feet, a little bit of knee flex, chest out a little bit, so that we're, literally where if we put a basketball on our hands, we could shoot a basketball from
okay.
our posture.
I'm standing up now. I'm going to do this.
Perfect.
Okay. All right,
so
go ahead.
Standing up, you know, feet about shoulder width apart, mm-hmm. arms across the chest. And then from there, basically what we want to do is just shift our weight a little bit into our right side and let our left shoulder feel like it kind of comes over to our right foot.
Mm-hmm.
And then unwind back the exact opposite way on the way through.
And should I be doing this at a speed that I'm swinging a club, or is just more of a stretching thing?
Right now, to start off with, it being your first time trying this drill over the phone, we're going to go at a very slow speed.
Okay.
So what we want to do is, really what we want to do is we want to feel the positions, okay? And when we talk about feeling our positions, we want to have an awareness of where our body is actually moving through space. So we feel our left shoulder work back into our, you know, towards our right foot, and then we unwind our body. Now, as we get more proficient at it, and it gets a little easier for us, then we can actually do it where we add speed to it, where we would do it like we're swinging a club.
I got a question before we go on, though.
Absolutely.
Feet placement. You said shoulder width. That's fine.
Yep. Absolutely.
Should the feet be parallel to one another, or should they be angled out?
Slightly angled out.
Slightly angled, not really wide. Just a little bit.
No, not really wide. I mean, we don't want it to where our feet are making a, you know, sort of a V-type look, but we do want them angled out just a little bit.
And why is it sometimes I read that if you widen your stance on your drive, you'll get more distance on it?
As a general rule, the wider our stance gets, the less our lower body can rotate. So essentially, if our lower body rotates less and we get a good shoulder turn, we're creating more torque in our body.
Mm-hmm.
When we can create good torque on the way back and then release that torque on the way through, we actually end up creating more speed.
Oh, so then it's true that you'll be able to do that? You'll get more distance on your drive?
Not necessarily for everyone. For some people, yes.
Okay. Okay, how about a putting drill?
Putting drill we can definitely do. A great putting drill to do, and this is a drill to help us feel as though our bigger muscles actually move the putter head as opposed to our smaller muscles being our hands and our forearms and our wrists, specifically moving that putter head. And what we
Now, you just confused me on which was the bigger muscles and which were the smaller muscles.
Bigger muscles are our stomach and oblique muscles.
Okay.
Our shoulders. And we want to take out the little muscles, the hands, the wrists.
And we want to take that out.
We want to take that out,
awesome.
Yes. We don't want wrist action in our putting stroke.
Okay, go for it. This is good. Now let's get
all
that
right.
Drill.
So what we're going to do is we're going to have to stand up for this one.
I am.
And perfect.
And I know our listener is right now. We have one person who's listening.
Beautiful.
And they're on a train. They're going to work, and they're standing there.
Excellent. So they're standing up, and what they're going to do is they're going to have very similar posture to the pivot that we talked about earlier, where they've got their weight a little bit on the balls of their feet, a little bit of bend from the hips, so they almost feel like they're sticking their backside out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to take the insides of each hand and connect them. So basically the pinky finger on your right hand and the pinky finger on your left hand are touching. Essentially, your palms are facing away from your body.
Palms are facing away. Oh, I see. Okay, good.
Palms are facing away from you. What that does, you can feel it kind of tucks your elbows into your sides a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And from there, now we just want to rock our shoulders
the
back
sides
and through.
The sides of your hands are touching one another.
Exactly.
Pinky to pinky.
Pinky to pinky, exactly.
Okay.
Palms facing out.
Okay, got it.
And then from there, we just rock our shoulders back and through. And what it does is it allows our hands to travel in a nice line back and through, and we can feel the connection between our arms and our chest and limit our independent arm motion.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I do this, my hands seem to be going like at an arc.
Yes.
And do you want that to be going on a putt?
Yeah, we want a little bit of an arc on a putt. The main reason why is because the putter shaft itself actually sits on a slightly tilted plane.
Mm-hmm.
If it were perpendicular to the ground, well, then we'd want it to travel straight back and straight through. But because it's on a little bit of a tilt, we want to make sure we have just a little bit of arc in that putting stroke.
So you shouldn't try to get your putter head to go exactly straight back because it's not really possible. Is that
right? Is correct. It is possible to do, but essentially it would be outside of the target line.
And what will happen? The ball will go off to the right side or something? Or
generally speaking, if the putter head travels too far outside the target line on the way back, the player is going to then come across it on the way through. If the putter face stays square, they're going to pull it and miss the putt to the left. If they open the putter face, the ball is going to come off with a very skittish type motion and some right side spin on it.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you.
Not a problem at all. There's a good helpful little drills there.
Yeah, I like that one. I'm doing that one right now. That's really good. How long have you been instructor?
I've been with David now for 5 years.
Okay, and before that?
Before that, I was in the golf industry. I did. I was an assistant pro down here in Florida for a little bit, and then also up in Wisconsin.
Okay, and you from Wisconsin?
I am originally from Wisconsin. That's how I know about all those cold, harsh winters and putting the clubs away for a few months.
Yeah, well, you must be loving 12 months a year golf.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. And also want to say congratulations publicly that you just became a daddy again, huh?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's really great. Hey, as a golfer, what's the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I ever received probably a while back. I was out playing with a gentleman, and he basically told me that you need to stay within yourself when you're out playing. And when we talk about staying within ourselves and playing, basically what it means is that if there's a sand trap that's 295 yards to carry and it's a little bit into the breeze, don't try to hit driver over that sand trap because you're not going to. So stay within yourself, play your game. You know, if there's a, if you generally hit your best 3-wood on your best day, 210 yards, and you're hitting it, you know, over a water hazard to a flag that's, you know, 215 yards, you might as well just lay up because you're only going to bring bigger numbers into play by trying to hit it really, really hard and get it all the way there. Take your time, stay within yourself, hit the layup shot. You've got a much higher percentage playing, you know, two wedges than you do trying to hit, you know, the best 3-wood that you've ever hit in your life.
Great. And as an employee of David Ledbetter, what's the best advice he's ever given you?
The best advice that David's ever given me is from an overall teaching perspective, really it's viewing the importance of the fundamentals and how much a good grip, how much a good setup, and just the importance of the overall fundamentals, the ball position, the overall setup in general.
Have you gotten to watch him as a teacher? I mean, not necessarily be as a student, but be the fly on the wall as he's teaching? Have you had the chance to...
Quite a bit, yeah. Being here at the World Headquarters in Orlando, this is where David teaches a majority of his tour players.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have the opportunity to sit down and watch lessons and observe lessons and really help David, you know, with his lessons as they go.
And have you ever had, like, one of those moments where he was instructing something and you were like, whoa, you're just blown away, like that is a phenomenal piece of advice?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I've seen that more than one time with David. I mean, David is just an extremely intelligent individual, and you know, to say that he understands the golf swing would be an absolutely phenomenal understatement. The guy's a genius. He really is. And there's been a few times when I've observed him with lessons where he said stuff, and, you know, not out loud, I'm going, wow, that is amazing. But, you know, it's one of those little things where you go, you know what, I want to make sure that I write this down because this is something that this is too important for me to ever forget. So, yeah, I mean, I've got a little notebook at home with some stuff in it.
With Ledbetterisms?
Exactly. That's a great way to put it, too. Great way to put it.
Better Ledbetters.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for giving your time to us today. I know you got to get home back to the family now that it's getting bigger.
It is getting bigger. And, it is definitely getting bigger.
I appreciate your time, and tell your buddies over there that also teach at the Ledbetter School that we'd love to talk to them as well.
That sounds absolutely fantastic, Fred, and I appreciate your time.
All right. Aaron Fagan, the senior instructor for the David Ledbetter Academy in Orlando, Florida. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Trick or treat? Hey, Kenny.
Happy, hey, happy Halloween, Fred.
You too. What do you got in your bag? Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Well, since the winter months are coming in, everybody's getting a little bit of cabin fever, I figured we'd touch base on something that's vitally important to the golf game during the winter months, and that's training aids.
Oh, good, because my conversation with Aaron that we just concluded, we talked briefly about training aids, and I were hoping you were... Oh, boy, does this sound like a plant.
Yeah.
I was hoping that you would do that. Now, I'm not a big fan of training aids, but there is time of the year when you need to keep loose and keep your swing going. Tell me a good one.
Well, there's several out there I want to touch on real quick. The first one is the Speed Stick. Vijay Singh is a huge sponsor of this product, and it comes in a variety of different weights. I mean, if you take... somebody, say you got a good-looking 5'2", 104-pound female.
Watch it.
And then you got a muscular 6-foot-tall, 205-pound guy. They're obviously going to use two different products there. So they make one for every size range, basically, with different weights involved. And what the main thing about the Speed Stick and the Momentus, which is another swing trainer that's a weighted club, is it helps with muscle memory. Golf is a huge sport where muscle memory is key to the golf swing. Once you get the golf swing in the perfect, you know, position at the top, position at the bottom, and so on and so forth, it's where muscle memory takes over. And a weighted golf club is going to create that muscle memory. It's real hard. If you haven't used one of these before, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. It's real hard to have a swing flaw with a weighted club. It's hard to take the club outside in. It's hard to bring it inside out. You know, you can't cast at the top because it is weighted. So it works basically on a strictly a pendulum basis. And if you use that thing enough, you're going to see that it does create a huge muscle memory part of the game.
I'm sorry if I'm laughing under while you speak, because the last couple of shows, we talked to Carrie Mumford, we talked to Jay Ewing, and they both said that the muscles don't have memories. I mean, so they have a big issue with that. But when you swing one of those heavy clubs and you get that feeling and you can't go outside the line, you get a nice solid swing, what happens when you put it down and put your club in your hands?
It, hopefully, I mean, I've used the product. Some people use them as warm-up tools before they go on the golf course. I know for a fact, with me personally, I tend to keep the same swing process throughout. Now, they say muscles don't have memory. The mind works in a very mysterious way. I beg to differ in my own perspective. I mean, you take somebody that bowls or golfs or plays tennis or anything like that, the muscles obviously go at a certain point at a certain given time, and that's through memory, whether it's muscles or mind. And to me, the Speed Stick and the Momentus are two clubs that give you the perfect swing form that you need. There are a couple other swing devices out there. The Medicus is one that we sell and been selling for a long time that has the hinge in the towards the bottom of the shaft, probably about 8 inches up from the hosel. And what it does is it teaches you, if you have a flaw in your swing, whether it's on the takeaway or the downswing, the hinge actually breaks and tells you that there's a swing flaw. Once you get the swing in perfect form, the hinge is not going to break, so you know that your swing is absolutely perfect. And then you can transfer that over to your regular golf club. To me, it's just repetition. It's like anything else, playing a guitar, playing a piano, or whatever sport you want to play. It's just repetition. You're not going to get it right when you first pick it up. But through training and through repetition, you're going to get it. And these clubs offer you that advantage.
And the winter months is a good time to do that.
Absolutely. It's a great time to do that.
And what should we be looking to spend on one of these products?
I mean, like a Speed Stick is going to run about $100. The Momentus is going to be about $90. And the Medicus, you can go anywhere from $170 to $130.
Okay. Cool.
And we also sell hitting nets and what we call the True Strike hitting mats. If money's not an option and you like to spend a lot of money and set up some type of indoor driving range in your garage, the True Strike's a great platform to be able to hit golf balls and feel like you're on a golf course. The pad that they use where the club actually strikes the ball is, we have one set up here in our warehouse when we can't get out to the golf course to do demo days or what have you, and we test products here, and it gives you a very true feel
for, you know, if you were basically sitting on the driving range. It does cost money, obviously, more than some are willing to spend, but those guys that are, you know, just absolutely are in love with it and want to put something in their house or their garage, they can do something like that as well.
Are you inferring that our audience is cheap?
Absolutely not.
Hey, they own iPods and computers.
Exactly.
So, at least most of them do. All right, good. Well, that's good information. Thank you for providing that for us. But we have other business we have to take care of. So do you have more to talk about on training aids, or can we move on?
No, that's pretty much it as far as training aids. There's the one that we sell a lot of, too, is called the Inside Approach. It's basically made out of PVC and has some foam on it as well. It's been endorsed by some very large names in the golf industry, and it's one that teaches you to swing the club from the inside out instead of from the outside in. When you bring the club from the outside in, you're going to hit this piece of a PVC with some padding on it, and it's, you're going to be able to tell instantly that you've broke it, and not broke it, but basically knocked it apart, and you have to put it back together, and you realize that that swing is not going to work for most everybody. It teaches you to get the club inside where it's supposed to be.
What about putting aids?
Putting aids basically is... Putting is something that you have to kind of figure out for yourself. For me, it's concentrate on pendulum. We sell putting greens here as well. Putting is repetition. It's obviously the place you're going to pick up more strokes around the green than you are anywhere else in your golf game. So if you're, and that's the one part of practicing that is absolutely free. Range balls is going to cost you money. Putting does not. You know, you can chip and putt all you want, usually for free at your local golf course, and that is where most people lose strokes. Especially your medium to high handicap players.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, they can be laying two around the par four around the green all the time, but they're going to take three or four sometimes to knock it in the hole.
Yes, I know. Not happy about that. All right. So now let's move on. I think we've done our training aids for today. Thank you very much, Kenny. But there's other more important business. Giveaways, freebies.
That's what everybody wants.
That's what I want.
That's what I want today.
Yeah, right, exactly. Last couple of weeks, we've been having people send in entries for the OGO Monster Travel Bag for a value of $300, and that includes, you'll include the shipping. You will ship it to anywhere in the world, right?
I will, absolutely.
Okay, good. So we've received 87 entries over the last couple of weeks, and I've taken those 87 entries in a spreadsheet, and I've sorted them by city, alphabetically by city, so it really makes no difference whether they entered on the first day that we announced it or just late last night. It's all about the city. So we have 1 through 87. You pick a number, and the winner will be?
Number 86.
Number 86 is Paul Dundas. And he actually is overseas with the U.S. military.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, that's great.
Congratulations.
Oh, Paul is going to be so excited because my sense is he travels a lot.
He travels for a good reason. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, great. Paul, congratulations. I'm sure he's going to be very happy about that. But now, what are we going to do next? Let's take another giveaway. What do we want to give away? And we'll do a two-week drawing, so that means that entries have to be in by November 13th, and we'll draw it on November 14th. What are we giving away now?
I've talked to some of my friends at Cleveland, and we're going to do actually the new Cleveland high-bore titanium driver.
A brand-new driver from Cleveland?
Absolutely.
Whoa.
And we talked about MOI last week, which was moment of inertia. It has the highest moment of inertia of most clubs out there right now, the larger sweet spot than most clubs out there now.
But
inverted cone technology. I mean, it's an awesome golf club.
And you can find more information about this golf club at edwinwattsgolf.com?
Yes, you can.
/golfsmarter. Excellent. Okay, the Cleveland Highbore driver. So remember that when you enter, your email address is going to be provided to Edwin Watts Golf. But to win, send an email with the subject Cleveland to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com, and please include your name and mailing. You've gotten much better about this. Your name and mailing address so that we can send you the prize when you win it. And for more information, check the show notes. Again, it's only 2 weeks to get your entry in, so the deadline for entries is midnight, November 13th, and we will announce the winner on the program starting November 14th, 2006. Now, because we're also entering November, our special that we offered last month for footwear?
Footwear, correct.
Yep, that is expired, and we need to offer something else to our listeners for sticking with us on this thing. And for November, what are we going to offer them?
For November, we're going to do something a little bit different. Any order over $50, we're going to give them a free Premier Soft Cabretta leather glove.
Any size, either hand?
Any size, either hand.
Awesome. A Premier Soft Cabretta leather glove, and all you have to do is spend $50. And if you've ever spent money at a golf store before, you know that $50 goes very quickly. So next time you're planning on spending $50, if it's going to be during the month of November, spend it at edwinwattsgolf.com/golfsmarter and tell them that you're a Golf Smarter listener, and you will receive a Premier Soft Cabretta leather glove, any size, any hand. You can also call them at 1-800-874-0146. Just make sure that you mention the Golf Smarter podcast. Or, better yet, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Edwin Watts banner at the top of the page, and you can get your information there. Or if you just want to request a catalog, make sure that they know that you were cattle prodded into it by Golf Smarter.
There you go.
All right, Kenny, that's awesome. Thanks so much, buddy.
I enjoyed it.
And to ensure that the Golf Smarter podcast continues, we'd really appreciate it if you could support our sponsors so that they will continue to support us so we can deliver this content to you. So as a listener to the Golf Smarter podcast, it's clear that you're interested in moving your game to the next level. So when your game deserves the very best personalized instruction, there's only one choice, the Bird Golf Academy. To find out more, please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the link to birdgolf.com. We end with our quote of the week, which is submitted by you if you have a favorite golf quote that keeps your head in the game or just entertains you. Send an email with the subject quote to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And this week's quote comes from Robert Justice of Uncasville, Connecticut, and he's quoting Dr. Bob Rotella. The putt, perhaps more than any other stroke, is affected by attitude, by how a player thinks about putting, by his confidence. Thanks for listening to the Golf Smarter podcast. I'm Fred Green.